Penguin Random House Audio presents Refuge by Dina Nayeri. Read for you by Mojan Marneau and Yusuf Kamal. For Sam and Elena, who appeared one day and brought all the joy, and for my insatiable Persian family, a scattered village of poets and pleasure seekers. I am always going home. Always to my father's house. Novalis. The Way Appears. Jalal ad-Din Rumi. No way. You will not make the Netherlands home. Geert Wilders, Message to Refugees, 2015.
Dr. Hamidi's Difficult Divorce. June 2009, Isfahan, Iran. In order to finalize his own ugly business, as if the universe were demanding one last slice of flesh, Bahman was compelled to watch 13 consecutive divorces, a full docket. By the sixth one, he stared baffled at his young lawyer, who was also slowly succumbing to the malaise of it, uneasy shoulders sinking, loose lips draped over half his cigarette, and mouthed, "This is absurd." "Forgive me, aha doctor, what do you mean?" The attorney raised both eyebrows as if Bahman should have expected this farce, as if an ordinary man should be accustomed to watching pale husbands slump and flinch, pretty wives crumble 13 times just to complete his own errand. There is always an instant, isn't there, when youth fails? And who wants to see it? They sat in plastic chairs just outside the cleric's office, watching through the crack in the door, which had been left ajar, it seemed, expressly for that purpose. His young lawyer kept wiping his hands on his cheap gray trousers and sipping hot tea. Sometimes the boy would get up to refill the two fingers of liquid in his tulip glass from the rusted samovar atop a long table in the corner where two secretaries in black chadors were engaged in some joyless business. Why had he hired the fidgety lawyer? After all, despite Bahman's secular education and volumes of subversive poetry, his children's indulgent American degrees and his fugitive first wife, he was still the male in an Iranian divorce, a secure position. Things would go easily for him here, though, yes, he was planning to tell some lies, and more important, when is a third divorce ever easy? Yesterday, drinking at home from his own samovar, Bahman had reflected on today's errand with anticipation. It had been coming for a long time. He considered how the next chapter of his life might read. Perhaps he would buy a new couch and lose weight, maybe get a new crown on his molar and take a plane trip somewhere warm, somewhere without visa hassles, Cyprus or Dubai or Istanbul. He might even arrange to see his children. On that last morning before his court date, Sanaz didn't yell or throw anything. Instead, he heard her weeping in the guest bedroom and knocked on the half-open door. He stood there, shuffling in the doorway in his royal blue pajamas, and when she looked at him with wrecked eyes, covered in all that garish makeup, her chipped toenails three shades of red and filed far too straight, he worked up the courage to say, "Why are you sad, Azizam?" Then, gathering himself, he whispered, "Don't you know how young you are? Same age and already Nilu. Ak! Dirt on my head. Always Nilu, Nilu." She spat, mucus and tears. "You are a weak man, without reputation or rank or anything, and your bastard daughter is nothing to me." He wanted to point out that Nilu was the furthest thing from a bastard. Of his three wives, the first had been the most educated and charming. Pari was the love of his youth, and her talents had passed on to their children. He had a photo of him and Pari at a picnic in Ardestun, her head on his shoulder, his hand on her cheek, as if it was any ordinary privilege. Do young men realize what they take for granted? In the photo, he seems oblivious to the cheek he is touching. Was Parry loved enough before she ran away to America? He was ashamed of having blurted Nilu's name so gracelessly in such a discussion. It was an ungainly moment, and he fled the scene. He had not spoken of their embarrassing age difference in 3 years. 3 years of lost friendships, of angry relatives, of humiliation, isolation, and money hemorrhaging as if from a wet paper bag. Releasing the words like that, alone in a doorway in blue pajamas, felt like the skin of his heart peeling away. For half a day he loitered in a tea shop near the 33 Arches, waiting for that overexposed, raw flesh feeling to subside. Between two routine cavity fillings, he walked by the courthouse to prepare himself for the next day. Rows of men with typewriters sat outside, hawking their services for a few hundred tomans a page. Petitions and eloquent appeals and supplications in impressive legalese. Rows and rows of peddler poets, would-be scholars, novelists, historians, and songwriters selling fluency to those whose words had run out. Farther out in the fringes, lingering greasily near both the male and female entrances to the courthouse, idling away the hours, smoking cigarettes and casting furtive glances at petitioners, were the witnesses for hire, extra pairs of eyes to reclaim those moments lost to inopportune privacy. Bahman watched a woman rush out of the courthouse, speak to one for 10 minutes as she clutched her black coverings to her mouth, and guide him to the men's entrance. How long have the courts been so willfully blind? He wandered back to his office. Today, on entering the courthouse through that same door, he had been inspected for weapons by 3 Pasdars. His mobile phone was taken away, and his late father's green handkerchief was eyed with great suspicion, since it resembled the wristbands of Green Movement protesters. Luckily, his modest suit and the counting beads worrying away in his fingers, signs of a resigned, aged sort of life, pickled, fallen into place, as they say in the village, saved him, and the guards waved him through, returning to their bags of pistachios and sunflowers, cracking and chewing and spitting as they talked. They were young men, none over 30. Probably they were sick of frisking the old men who passed through these doors to divorce their sisters or mothers or former lovers. The thought saddened Bahman, and before he went in he said to the youngest Pasdar, "Gotbi will be good, I think." He glanced around as he considered what more he could say about the new Iranian national soccer coach. World Cup, for sure. The young Pasdar eyed him strangely for a second, then he grinned. "For sure, Aha Doctor." He held out his bag of pistachios and patted Bahman on the back, a rude gesture considering Bahman's age, and yet this is what he had wanted, to be young, like the boy. Bahman took one and nodded thanks. The boy said, "If life was simple, I'd go to South Africa and watch all the games from the front." Now, squirming under the harsh light of the courthouse waiting room, he heard a couple explaining their situation to the judge. Though inclined to resist this circus, which felt much like watching 20 strangers on the toilet, he strained to listen. He might as well let go of his private distaste now that he was stuck. From the moment he stepped into this muggy clerical office and breathed its overused air, he'd been caught in a wonderland crafted by Rumi or Hafez or some other cruel wit. "I grant her divorce," the young man said. "Let her have it." This caught Bahman's attention because what Iranian man would agree to a divorce he didn't initiate? It's a matter of pride. If the wife requests it, only madness and impotence are legal reasons. If this is a case of mutual abandonment, the man should request it for both of them, since he needs to show no cause and it's a smaller headache for everyone. Is this boy admitting to insanity? Impotence? Maybe he wants to rub yogurt on the marriage gift to negotiate away the sum to which every divorced woman is entitled.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?